All right. Hello, everybody.
If any of you are curious as to why I'm here today and not still locked to a boat in downtown Portland, you're welcome to stay on at 12:15 and I can give you the rundown. The gist of it was we weren't arrested. The cops didn't stop us. We just had to, there's a whole lot of protest groups in downtown Portland who tend to, their interactions tend to escalate into violence and of either property damage or violence. And apparently like our action was going to be a focal point of various groups coming together to prove their points. So we didn't want to be part of that. Anyway, if you want to know more, at 12:15. So I'll go around and greet everybody. And then I'm going to be turning it over. The special treat. I arranged this because I thought I might be gone, but here I am. So actually, So-On is going to be giving our talk today. Sangha member talk. So I'll start with greeting Andy and Bob K. Claudia. Mark W. Paulette. Jinryu. So-On. Kate. Marv. Alice. Sam. John. Pat. Linda. Sarah. Mary. Grant, Amanda, Amelia,
good morning,
Sabrina, Shoketsu, and Tyler, and Ken. All right. There was some moving around there at the last minute, so I'm not sure if I got everybody. Okay, cool. Let's see. Oh, next Saturday. Is a one-day retreat. So check the newsletter, check the website from about 8:30 until 3:30 or 4 in the afternoon. We have periods where we come together for practice and then we go off and have recommended personal practice and then come back together. So it's a very sweet way to structure the part of your Saturday and practice with Sangha. So you're welcome to, if you want to participate in the whole thing, you know, it's lovely to get a registration and, you know, just know that you're going to be there, but you can also just drop in or participate in part of it. So I'm trying to think, is there anything else I should announce? Anything anybody knows about that or any questions about what's coming up? All right. I will turn it over to So-On. Oh, you're still muted.
There we go. There it is. Good morning, everyone. I'm trying to copy and paste something into the chat. And you know what? It's not actually going all the way. I'm going to give a talk today about a poem that is long enough to not want to fit in the chat right now. So I'll put it in two pieces. It's called The Song of the Grass Roof Hermitage, and it's by Sherto. In the morning services, he wrote Harmony of Difference and Sameness, and this is a monk from, I think he was born in the year 700, they're estimating anyway. Let me make my view, maybe a gallery view here. So I am trying to copy and paste this. Okay, so I can do it in two. So let me do that. OJ Palaces. Okay, here we go. That way you can read along. And if you just Google Song of the Grass Roof Hermitage, the name of the teacher is Sherto. It's spelled S-H-I-T-O-U. And actually, he was a teacher. He was very famous in his day. And he built a hut on this rock outcropping near the temple. And because of that, they called him, basically it means rock head. So it's kind of a funny name for him. So there it is. There it is. I've built a grass hut where there's nothing of value. After eating, I relax and enjoy a nap. When it was completed, fresh weeds appeared. Now it's been lived in, covered by weeds. The person in the hut lives here calmly, not stuck to inside, outside, or in between. Places worldly people live, he doesn't live. Realms worldly people love, he doesn't love. Though the hut is small, it includes the entire world. In 10 square feet, an old man illumines forms and their nature. A great vehicle bodhisattva trusts without doubt. The middling or lowly can't help wondering, will this hut perish or not? Perishable or not, the original master is present, not dwelling south or north, east or west. Firmly based on steadiness, it can't be surpassed. A shining window below the green pines. Jade palaces or vermilion towers can't compare with it. Just sitting with head covered, all things are at rest. Thus, this mountain monk doesn't understand at all. Living here, he no longer works to get free. Who would proudly arrange seats trying to entice guests? Turn around the light to shine within, then just return. The vast, inconceivable source can't be faced or turned away from. Meet the ancestral teachers. Be familiar with their instruction. Bind grasses to build a hut and don't give up. Let go of hundreds of years and relax completely. Open your hands and walk, innocent. Thousands of words, myriad interpretations are only to free you from obstructions. If you want to know the undying person in the hut, don't separate from this skin bag here and now. Now that often gets a chuckle, that last line. So for sources on this, there's actually a book called Inside the Grass Hut from a Western teacher named Ben Connolly. And there's some good, like, you know, because, the point of these shastras and sutras that we read in our modern Zen tradition is like, what does it mean to you? Although it is important to know the context of when it was written and maybe some of the metaphors that were common at the time when they were writing. And so I'll talk a little bit about that. But really it's like, how does this poem resonate for you in your personal practice experience? Another resource I used was Fumio Mishaga, is a lay teacher over at Dharma Rain. And he gave a Dharma talk a few years ago, and that's on the Dharma Rain website. The Dharma talk's called Meeting the Ancestral Teachers in a Grass Hut. And what I loved about what he said that Sherto's poem is a model for practice. And it's also a guide for what practice should look like and what it looks like. And he said, Sherto emphasized continuous practice of mindfulness. And I guess that's kind of what he was known for, was his steadfast practice. This is in the 8th century. He's the 8th generation after Bodhidharma. So this is an early Zen ancestor in the Tang Dynasty. He lived to be about 90 years old. And it is said that he started his practice when he was a kid. He was maybe 8 years old or something, visited a temple and was inspired to Zen practice. So he also wrote Harmony of Difference and Sameness, and he focuses on the different aspects of reality and how we experience them simultaneously. So let's take a look. I've built a grass hut where there's nothing of value. You know, nothing can be really more transient and temporary than a grass hut. I mean, it's made out of grass, so it's biodegradable. It's going to either rot or a wind could kick up and just blow it away in an instant, or a fire could burn it quickly. So the first thing he starts with in this poem is transience. And that's one of the three marks of existence in the old tradition of anicca, anatta, which is non-self, and dukkha, which is, you know, the reality of suffering that we all understand. But anicca is that, you know, impermanence, intransience, everything arises and falls away. So he starts with that. And he says, after eating, I relax and enjoy a nap. So he's, you know, he's chilling in this grass hut. He built this grass hut. He takes refuge and he relaxes in this realm of impermanence. He is comfortable with his relationship with impermanence. So I've built a grass hut where there's nothing of value. And the idea of nothing of value is he's not grasping at anything. You know, when we value something, we're either hanging on to that or we're pushing it away. So, he's not only comfortable with impermanence, he's comfortable with that grasping that we have. Greed, hate, and delusion. He's just let that go. One thing to know is I've heard a few teachers talk about that second line, after eating, I relax and enjoy a nap. A lot of these poems have metaphors, and eating can be a metaphor for reading a sutra or studying, and enjoying a nap, taking a nap, is sometimes a metaphor for zazen. So instead of really saying, I ate some food and then I took a nap, what he really may be saying is, I read a sutra and then I sat in zazen. When it was completed, fresh weeds appeared. Now it's been lived in, covered by weeds. So I know when I sit, I don't just sit in this empty space. All these thoughts start arising, and you know, those are the weeds, and they appear, and they are part of our life, and they're not to be pushed away. They're part of our existence. The person in the hut lives here calmly, not stuck to inside, outside, or in between. Places worldly people live, he doesn't live. Realms worldly people love, he doesn't love. This thing is just a beautiful expression of non-attachment and not being so worried about those weeds. Though the hut is small, it includes the entire world. Domio, I think you did a podcast about Hua Yin and about the Avatamsaka Sutra. And so that's kind of a Hua Yin teaching about the interpenetration of all the things in the universe and how we're just not separate. We think we are, but we're just not separate. In 10 square feet, an old man illumines forms and their nature. You know, a lot of people in the West are 6 feet tall, but maybe not in China. So 10 square feet is pretty much, if I'm 5 feet tall, I'm a little over 5 feet tall. So if I outstretch my arms, that's about 10 feet square. So he's talking about the realm of his own bodily experience right there. And you know, this is it. This is all that we can know. There's a sutra, an old sutra, short, I forget what sutra it's from. It's a snippet, the Sutra on Totality. And it's where a student asks Buddha, is there anything outside that can be known? And he basically says, you know, aside from what we can see, what we can hear, what we can smell, taste, think about. There really isn't anything else. There can't be. It's impossible. So everything is within our experience. It's really, I love this poem so much because it's just so intimate and it's so personal. It's visceral. It really is. I mean, at the end, he definitely gets visceral talking about our skin bag. Perishable or not, the original master is present. Oh, wait, I skipped ahead. A great vehicle bodhisattva trusts without doubt. The middling or lowly can't help wondering, will this hut perish or not? And so we often hear the make no distinction between the dull and the sharp-witted. There's a lot of older shastras, sutras that talk about the difference between, you know, those who they don't quite get it and those who are really smart. You know, and I just love how he uses that. It was probably very common at the time, the smart and the dumb, the host and the guest. There's all these little dichotomies that were there in ancient China. But saying it doesn't really matter because perishable or not, the original master is present. And that's the Buddha to me. That's what it means to me. That's our Buddha nature. Whether our body, of course, our body's perishable. Of course, the hut's perishable too. But the Buddha is still there. That Buddha nature is there. It's not in a place, not dwelling south or north, east or west. It's not, you can't really pin it down, but it's there. Then this next line, firmly based on steadiness, it can't be surpassed. In the Chinese, the characters for that firmly based on steadiness, the characters are foundation, sight, firm, strong. And we remember his actual hut was built on a rock outcropping. And it's basically a metaphor for resting your life on a firm foundation of practice, of steady practice. A shining window below the green pines. Jade palaces or vermilion towers can't compare with it. In Chinese mythology, the king of heaven or the emperor of heaven lives in a jade palace. So to compare this humble little hut that's just out in the woods, you know, out in the mountains, to compare that, you know, you can't, it's more profound and wondrous than the palace of the King of Heaven. I just love that. Just love that line. Just sitting with head covered, all things are at rest. Thus, this mountain monk doesn't understand at all. And that's don't know mind. You know, there's a joke, you know, kind of in Zen communities sometimes, where somebody answers a question, I don't know. And says, you're bragging. Your Zen must be advanced. You don't know at all. There was somewhere where I heard that the line, just sitting with head covered, that there's a metaphor there too, but I couldn't find what that was and I can't remember what that was. That there's another metaphor for something that's very physical about, and maybe Domio knows, I don't know. Just sitting with head covered, all things are at rest. Thus, this mountain monk doesn't understand at all. Living here, he no longer works to get free. I love that line too. Think about the story about polishing a tile. I think you were just talking about that one too. Where Mazu was asked by his teacher, what are you doing? Why are you sitting, you know, why are you studying? Why are you doing Zazen? Well, so I can become a Buddha. And then the teacher picks up a tile and starts polishing. He's like, what are you doing with that? Oh, I'm trying to make a mirror just, you know, work so hard. So he's even let go of that. Who would proudly arrange seats trying to entice guests? And that line kind of confounds me. I'm still kind of working with that one. But that's another one of those Chinese philosophical, you know, this and that is host and guest. And so I think it has something to do with that. But also about pride, perhaps. You know, are you chasing after sensory pleasures? We've let go of that too. What's the point? Turn around the light to shine within, then just return. Let's see where that is. I think in Fukan Zazengi, it says turn the light and shine it inward. And you can see how the teachers, I mean, and that was, what, 500 years later or something, Dogen? So it's pretty amazing how these teachings are so resilient over time. This guy was born in like the year 700. And it moves me. I get a little verklempt. Just thinking the idea that here we are, I'm sitting here on Zoom with this technology and talking to you guys about this poem that was written all these hundreds of years ago, and that this man's words like can resonate with us now. It's pretty profound. The vast inconceivable source can't be faced or turned away from. And I don't know the Chinese, but I think the emphasis is on the word it can't. It can't be faced or turned away from. Let's see. Tozan, Dongchan wrote, turning away and touching are both wrong, for it is like massive fire. It's like we're just engulfed in it. We're a part of it. We can't turn away from it or face it. Meet the ancestral teachers. Be familiar with their instruction. And now the man who wrote those words, he's the ancestral teacher. And we're becoming familiar with his instruction. And his instruction is to bind grasses to build a hut and don't give up. This is great. Let go of hundreds of years and relax completely. And those hundreds of years can refer to our karmic inheritance. Whether you believe in reincarnation or not, just all the, it can feel, some of it can feel like hundreds of years. I know there's parts of my childhood that feel like hundreds of years long. And to be able to let that go and relax completely. And going back to the beginning, he says he took a nap. You know, when you take a nap, that's what you do. You let go of everything and you relax completely. And sometimes when you can't take a nap, it's because these thoughts are arising, your mind isn't settled. And that's, you know, those weeds. And if we're hanging on to those weeds, it's hard to relax completely. Open your hands and walk innocent. And walking, of course, is going out into the world and functioning in the world. We can't just sit in the hut and we can't just sit all day. We have to function. But we can open our hands when we do. And when you have open hands, you're not grasping at anything. You're not grasping anything. Thousands of words, myriad interpretations are only to free you from obstructions. So he's reminding us not to get hung up on his own words even. So he's telling us, meet the ancestral teachers, be familiar with their instruction, but don't get too hung up on their words. Because this is about your personal experience. They're only to free you from obstructions. They're the finger that's pointing to the moon. They're not the moon itself. If you want to know the undying person in the hut, Don't separate from this skin bag here and now. And it's funny because people, I know I did when I first heard this poem, and people kind of flinch when they hear that and see that, and people laugh about it, or they get grossed out. But that's actually based on a really old sutra and some teachings of there's the four foundations of mindfulness. And one of the teachings of impermanence is to regard the body as a bag of skin full of, you know, guts and pus and gross stuff, and to meditate on that, and to meditate on the body is kind of in a negative sense. But to, you know, teach these young monks the impermanence of the body, and but not to deny it. And that's, I think, what's different from perhaps the older tradition in Hinduism, which is kind of to deny the body, and we're going to become one with Atman someday. And there's all these yogic practices of, you know, denying the body. But he's saying, no, it's here. This is us. Yeah, sure, it's a skin bag. Sure it is. And sure the hut's perishable. But here we are. And isn't it wonderful? Isn't it beautiful? Jade palaces or vermilion towers can't compare with it. So, yeah, that's pretty much all. That's all I've got to say about that. What, as Tom Hanks might say. But I just thought I'd share this with you. I don't know how many of you have seen this poem before. So I just thought I'd share it with you. And it's Shirto, S-H-I. Here, I'll type that in too. Shirto Shichuan. That's the teacher. So that's it out of me. Thanks, Tomio. And I'm glad you're okay. I was thinking about you all night last night and early this morning. Like, where's Tomio? Is she okay? Glad to see you here.
Comments and questions then, I guess, huh? Just unmute yourself or raise your hand electronically.
It's Jinryu.
Yeah, I didn't know if you saw my hand or not. Thank you, So-on. This is a favorite poem of mine. I think you actually helped make it more favorite. I really appreciate the things you had to say. You know, the first time I got it, or the first time I read it, I knew it had a lot of importance for me, but it has taken me reading it many times to fully appreciate that. And I will say that the first time I read it, the whole idea of a skin bag was revolting. And I remember I had been in Zen less than a year. I had been practicing less than a year. And I went to the session for Silver Dragons. And they presented this poem. And I went in to see Mushin. And I asked her about that last sentence. And I said, you know, I really can't handle that. And besides, Domio is teaching us about Dogen. And he says, let's let the body and mind drop away. So what do I do with that? And she said, well, forget about that. There's so many lines in here that are my favorites, but one that jumped out at me today that might be another phrase favorite I have to add to my list, and now I can't find it. It's about um, thousands of words, myriad interpretations, are only to free you from obstructions. Well, that frees me from the obstruction of, I just don't get it. I have to study this more. What does he say about it? What does she say about it? You know, I'm never going to make it further on the path until I get this. And I appreciated seeing that again. So thank you for the thought you put into this.
This is a favorite of mine as well. And I haven't reread it in a long time. And it is interesting as we went through it, seeing how many of these lines have gotten stuck in my head and are just part of my internal metaphor. Can't be turned towards, can't be turned away from is a favorite for me. And it reminded me of a time I was visiting another meditation center, and the person that was trying, I sat down for their introduction to meditation, and the person, it was very, very important to the person who was teaching me their style of meditation that they face the room. They don't turn their backs on the world. And I tried not to do like a snotty Zen chuckle. Which direction is the world again? So that's always been one of my favorites, because everything we practice with is always like right here, right? No matter what we do, it's really beautiful. Thank you.
Anybody else? Is there anyone who wants to comment that maybe has not heard this poem before? Maybe your first impression. I'd be curious to hear it.
Any specific questions we can come up with, So-on?
Well, I don't know.
People loose on.
I don't know. How about you, Domio? What do you, what?
I don't know. There's just so much. There's just so much in here that we could say, what is this? I mean, really, like, what is the hut? What do people think the hut is? Because you build the hut, right? He says, you know, that's what he recommends. It's like diligent buying grasses to build a hut and don't give up. Sandy.
I think the hut is our attempt to separate or guard ourselves from the world. We build it. That's my interpretation.
Well, it's something that he's recommending, though. Which sounds like if we want to separate from the world, that's kind of a negative thing, right?
Oh, okay, yeah. Well, then maybe it's just live basically, because the hut is a basic type of house. Mm-hmm. Just you have to have a little bit to keep living, so live basically, but don't get caught up in fanciness, fancy building or something. Just basic living.
I think it's home.
What was that, Jinryu, and then who else? Who else?
I spoke up, and I think I talked over Sandy, maybe. But to me, the hut is home. And so when he says build a hut, come home. Sitting in Zazen is coming home to me.
What is home?
The hut. It's where you're comfortable.
As someone who had never seen the poem before, I was particularly struck by the line, but would you arrange seats to invite someone? And I thought that's captures a sharp paradox between, you know, sort of coming fully to yourself and connecting it to someone else. And, you know, that may be hard to do. So anyway, it seemed like there was a lot to think about there. So that was my newcomer's reaction to it.
It looks like Sarah and then Alice.
Also a newcomer to the poem. It made me think of in the Dhammapada, where they talk about, I've split the ridgepole and met the builder of my house, and never again will, you know, he build my house. So it occurred to me that if you split your house apart, if you've burned your house to the ground, and you're rebuilding something in an image that's more appropriate to reality, that shows the transience and shows the connection between all things, then yeah, you would build a hut. You would build something that fades away the same that you do. So it's a reflection of your nature, much more than a house would be, right? Trying to hold on to permanence and trying to hold on to something that exists. Well, it doesn't exist. So the hut reminded me of that phrase in Dhammapada.
Jump anytime you want, so own if you
are. Yeah, well, that just made me think of we are in the world, but not of the world. We're living in the world, but not of the world. And that makes me think of the Vimalakirti Sutra too, who was a householder. It's the only sutra, it's the only Chinese sutra. And he was a householder. He had a house, he had servants, he had, you know, business, but he wasn't attached to those things. So who is next?
Alice, did you want to still go?
Oh, sorry. I got distracted. I took it as like the poem is your practice. At least a lot of the things that when I sit zazen, there's a lot of imagery here that like really meshes with what is going on in here. You know, I used to compare this whole experience of Zen Buddhism as like building a house or building a hut. So the metaphor kind of like coincides with that. But also like trying to, I mean, 石头, so 石头 in Chinese is a stubborn rock. And the image of it is like just a round, stubborn, still, unmoving rock. And I think the poem really encapsulates that kind of persona of being completely still, which is where you find everything and nothing at the same time. And I think that's what I think of when I try to sit zazen. And I think that that's what the poem is kind of trying to describe, of everything and nothing at the same time. And then trying to encourage people to keep at it, because, you know, there's always perturbations, right? So that's all.
Yeah. Well, Fumio, I referred to the lay teacher Fumio from Dharma Rain, and he said, this is Sherto's model for practice, and it's a guide for considering what practice looks like. So it's like you're constructing your practice in a way. I love that image, is that, you know, stubborn, and it's just amazing how, you know, it's like the personalities of these teachers, you know, if you look at the Dunkaroku and some of these, you know, the stories of the teachers themselves and how their personalities can shine through. And you just wonder what it was like, what it must have been like to study with this old stubborn teacher that was just ever steadfast and encouraged steadfastness in his students.
So, and I'm wondering if you've given thought to, so like what Sarah brought up, the traditional image of the house, that's a bad thing. That's your, it's your ego, you're constructing your sense of self. And so the goal of Buddhist practice was to tear down that house. So like, what, you know, but he's telling us to build, okay, maybe it's not a house, but it's a hut. Like, what, I don't know. What have you?
I don't know. That's just welcome to Zen. Welcome to Zen. Because you're going to read this, you know, does a dog have Buddha nature? No. Does a dog have Buddha nature? Yes. You know, so you're going to read one sutra, one teacher, and you're going to get one story, you know, follow the teachings of the Buddha. If you meet the Buddha in the road and he obstructs your path, kill him. You know, you're going to get all these different messages. To me, it's just a matter of taking whatever that idea is and just deconstructing it. I mean, the whole Heart Sutra, the entire Heart Sutra basically lists all the basic Buddhist teachings and then says, meh.
So what do you think is skillfulness? What do you think is the skillfulness or utility of a teaching that's encouraging us to build a hut and be happy in it? Paulette has her hand.
If Paulette had, maybe Paulette knows.
Well, I didn't think about it until you asked that question, Domio, but the idea that a hut is more humble than a house. So like maybe maintain some humility in the process. But Alice, when she was talking, I thought of some things too. Like first I was looking at it and I thought, I really liked what people said about it being your practice. And then I thought, well, maybe it's our perception. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like the way we perceive things. Because it can be destroyed. Like, will this hut perish or not? So, I mean, I don't want to get too technical, but the idea of the perception and the master within, which is like the consciousness. And sometimes, you know, we color our perception in biased ways. And so, I mean, I don't know. I was just thinking about that. But I do like the idea of the hut being a humble structure and that it can change. You know, it's more vulnerable than a house.
Well, to me, it's about putting effort into something, because we're putting effort into something this morning by logging on and gathering. You know, when we read something, we put some effort into it. So binding these reeds, we're not hammering boards. We're not pouring concrete. We're binding together reeds.
Sam.
So this was a new poem for me. Thank you, Saul. And I really appreciated your insights and impressions and interpretations. On the big house, the Jade Palace, the big house, that's all a construct of the small self, the ego. Whereas building a grass hut, you're building it on your practice. And it's all about embracing impermanence and being comfortable with that. And I think I like the one of the things I like best about that piece of the poem is, and then there's fresh weeds. You know, even though you're building this practice, there's new weeds. They're not the old weeds. There's always new, fresh weeds, and to abide with them and be present with them. So, yeah, I do see this as a practice and looking to embrace our places in, you know, in the larger context of life, tearing down the small self, the small mind, jade palace, and finding a place in impermanence with practice, and become comfortable with that.
Alice.
So that last line, if you want to know the undying person in the hut, don't separate from the skin bag here and now. I had to think about that because I'm like, oh, what is skin bag? What does he mean by skin bag? And it's pibao in Chinese. But I think what he's trying to say is like, just be present. Because if you separate from the skin bag, from the body that you reside in, then that means that you're thinking about doing something else. Like, you know, you're thinking about work, or you're thinking about your plants, you're thinking about what to do, or you're thinking about what you're doing next, you know, kind of thing. So if you want to really understand the self, be present and don't leave your spot.
And what was it, Alice? What did you say the Chinese word was?
Pibao.
And how would you translate that?
In modern Chinese, it means purse. Because, you know, leather is made out of skin.
Huh.
So
that's even grosser somehow, a skin purse.
Bao bag.
So now, like, if you want to buy, let's say, like a fancy Louis Vuitton bag or something, we call it niao mai pi bao ma, meaning like, do you want to buy a leather bag?
Or a leather bag. All right.
Same bao as baozi. Like if you get a dumpling, is that the same bao?
Yeah, it's the same bao, but then it also means wrapping. Mm-hmm. So in Chinese, it's like the wrapping of something, or the wrapping of a bag, or yeah.
Cool. That's awesome to be able to know that. Pat.
I wanted to, like others, I want to appreciate Soong's preparation, but also I thought that you modeled for me a way to investigate the metaphors that are in here. And I think, didn't you refer to other people's breakdowns of the metaphors? And was it a book?
You know, I actually, I couldn't find where that, the source, a written source of the relax and enjoy a nap part, and those where basically, you know, I'm eating means reading the sutra, taking a nap means doing zazen. That may have come from Andy Ferguson, I'm not sure. But a lot of the commentary, there's a lot of wonderful commentary from Ben Connolly's book, Inside the Grass Hut, and also on Dharma Rain Zen Center's website, the Fumio's speech about it. There's, you know, I found that really pithy too.
Mark.
Mute button. I had a sudden recollection at the literary metaphor level. Sometimes grasses refer to myriad phenomena that we normally perceive as separate. So there's something really beautiful about the idea of binding together all myriad phenomena to make a home for yourself. And once that it's all bound together, that's where you live. So that metaphor finally broke open for me. I just thought I'd share it. It was neat.
Am I cutting in front of someone? Okay. Well, when Sarah was talking about the Dhammapada, I was thinking about all the metaphors in the suttas that describe meditation as a kind of dwelling itself, like the Brahmaviharas, you're dwelling in metta, you're dwelling in compassion, you're dwelling in equanimity. And I don't know what the term is that's being used just in the stock description of the Buddha, you know, abiding in meditation, you know, a day's an afternoon's abiding in meditation. But the Zen spin on this here is really cool because it's described as something like changing or impermanent. It's subject to change. So I keep reading this back through Dogen's idea that our Buddha nature, this unchanging thing, is impermanence, that Buddha nature is impermanence or change. So that last line, you know, non-separation from this mortal, you know, skin bag, that's our zazen, you know, is an expression of this change. Instead of transcending it, as you were saying, Selwyn, instead of sort of liberating this Atman, this, you know, this idea that there's an unchanging consciousness in there that's higher than the rest of the natural world, but instead it's an expression of natural change that we are.
That's why Fumio said he emphasized the continuous practice of mindfulness. You know, that non-separating. Just being right here, right now. I'm sure, I tell you, I'm not very good at it. It's good to have, thank you, Domio, for asking me to do this, because it helped me get back in touch with this poem, because I used to, you know, read this often. It's been a long time, so it helped me kind of oh yeah, that's right, I'm just gonna wash this carrot.
And for me, it's I just love Zen. You know, this is so amazing, the way that it Zen doesn't, it doesn't deny or contradict the Buddhism that came before it. And yet, personally, I think it's more profound in the sense that a lot of earlier practices, you know, the idea of the house being our ego and we need to destroy the house and not rebuild it. And it's very dualistic. It's very much about like what we have now is imperfect and needs to be improved. And there's, you know, our current messed up state, and there's a state we're going to get to. And yet, like, you know, which Kyogen was a great his central teaching, I feel, was about radical non-duality, which is like, if the essence of dukkha or dissatisfactoriness is wanting things to be other than how they are, then radical acceptance of how things are right here is instant liberation, instant peace. So I just love that this is like, we got to build something. We need something. What are we going to do with ourselves? We need a little shelter. We need a little something. I like how people are saying it's, you know, we build as much as we need, right? And we know that it's impermanent, and we know that it's imperfect and going to get covered with weeds. I like that. Any last thoughts? All right. I'll close with our verse. Abiding in this ephemeral world like a lotus in muddy water, the mind is pure and goes beyond. Thus we bow to Buddha. All Buddhas throughout space and time, all honored ones, Bodhisattvas, Mahasattvas, wisdom beyond wisdom, Maha Prajna Paramita. Thank you, So'on.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, everybody, for being here.
Thank Glad you. You're here.
Like I mentioned, in the chat, other Zen centers have 7 and 10 episode classes on this poem. And it's just illuminating that they would be willing to spend an hour or so on each stanza. And you're trying to cover it in 1 hour. Just amazing. Thank you so much, So'on.
Well, thank you.
Fabulous introduction. Really appreciate it.
Thank you for the opportunity and Domio for the, because I don't normally do something like this. So you're like, go ahead and ask him a question, you know? I'm like, I don't know what to do.
I do feel like it's a little harder to get people to chime in on Zoom. Just, you know, because you're like, I don't know, is somebody else going to talk? Maybe I shouldn't.
Yeah. I just saw the most awkward news interview this morning. And it was like one of these newscasters and the Secretary of State. And he would try to say something that you, and they'd have dead air for like 20 seconds, and it happened 3 times in a row. So I thought, okay, yeah, welcome to the world of Zoom. Oy vey. Speaking of happy Passover, Easter, and all that other wonderful stuff, too.
Isn't Easter, when is?
Next week, isn't it?
Easter's next week? Okay.
Is that next week?
And good Lord, is Vesak next week? Is it really? Oh my God. I don't know. I
can't believe this year.
Yeah.
It's gone so slow, but also so fast. Like, how did this, everything just rushes up. How did this happen the last 12 months?
One big day. One big long day.
Yes. Just mushy time.
Yeah.
But thank you for your talk, So'on. I love your comments just on a weekly basis. So I was looking forward to it.
Appreciate it. I'll try to get my... get my butt going sooner and get breakfast going sooner. All right.
All right, everybody.
Bye. Bye.